John chapter 6. In every life or any relationship or any job, there comes a moment, right? There comes a moment where the person says the thing. He says, I love you. And she says in her head, uh-oh, right? Everything, there's this moment where we have to make big decisions where I'm going to go this way or am I going to go this way? Am I going to take this job that's going to take me across the country to this place or am I going to take this job that leaves me at home? Am I going to marry this person? Am I going to go into this relationship? Am I going to do this thing? Am I going to leave? Oh, I love this job, but it's time for me to leave. Is there this space here? Like every life is filled with moments where we have to make a decision. And the text that we're going to do this morning is that kind of a text. It's a moment in the life of Jesus for his first followers to say, are we really in? Yes or no? What are we going to do here? And I have to tell you, I won't lie. There's some passages that are a lot more fun to teach than others. This one is great because of that. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to read, and then we're going to discuss a little bit, and then I'm going to come back through and hit some of the highlights for me. I want to say just briefly, there's a lot of us in the room this morning, and it's great in the middle of the summer to have a packed church. And I just want to say, last week, if you weren't here, you missed we had Nacho Mama's food truck come in after church, and we ate grilled cheese outside after church, and it was a blistering 5,000 degrees out there and muggy, but the grilled cheese was excellent. And it gave us an opportunity, Dustin and I think we compared notes, and we said there was like five new couples or newish couples or families. And I just want to say, it's funny, in the middle of the summer, a lot of people go on vacation, but there's a lot of you here, which means that there's a lot of you that I don't really know. And I want to tell you this as we start this morning. First of all, I'm telling you, here's how we roll. I'm going to read, and then we're going to talk. And so you can ask questions. It's fine. And I just want to say, if you're new with us, I hear people say sometimes things like, I would go to church, but I don't know enough, or this is not enough thing. I'm not spiritual enough, or I'm not enough. And I just want to say, for us here, if you want to spend 45 minutes and think about spiritual things, that's enough. If that's what brings you here, I don't care where you're at in your journey, and maybe you've been a follower of Jesus for a long time, or maybe you're really not, but you're interested in something here is making you think, you're welcome here, and we're excited that you're here and excited that you're part of this conversation. So I just need to say that once in a while. John chapter 6. On hearing it. Oh, can I back up and tell you what they're hearing? A reminder of the last couple weeks in case you haven't been here. So in the beginning of John, thank you for the affirmation. I love affirmation. John chapter 6, at the very beginning, Jesus does a miracle, which is what? Feeds 5,000 men, plus women and children. So he feeds a lot of people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Then we had the story several weeks ago of him walking on the water in the middle of the storm. Then we got to the bread of life teaching. And in that teaching, I rubbed bread all over myself. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened in that moment. I got carried away in my exuberance about bread. But we talked about the idea of bread. I just want to give you the summary so we get here. The summary of the bread of life teaching is that we often think of bread in our culture as optional, as something like, you know, hold the bread. I saw guys eating hot dogs without the buns, which seems pointless to me. But, you know, like that's in our culture, bread is optional. It's more calories. I don't bring out the bread before the meal. I don't want to get filled up. It's filler. And we said that one of the points of the bread of life passage is these are a people who probably at least half of their diet is bread. And so when Jesus says, I'm the bread of life, oh, that's huge to them. It's essential. It's the center. And then Jesus, if you remember from last week, goes into this Eucharistic teaching about you have to eat my body and drink my blood. And that's what they've just heard. All right. So verse 60, on hearing it, everything right there, many of his disciples said, this is a hard teaching. Who can accept it? Aware that his disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, does this offend you? Then what if you see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? The Spirit gives life, the flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you, they are full of the Spirit and life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe. For Jesus had known from the beginning which of them did not believe and who would betray him. He went on to say, this is why I told you that no one can come to me unless the Father has enabled them. From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. You do not want to leave me too, do you? Jesus asked the 12. Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and to know that you are the Holy One of God." Then Jesus replied, "Have I not chosen you, the 12? Yet one of you is a devil." He meant Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, who, though one of the 12, was later to betray him. So what stands out to us? What are the things that capture our imagination or cause questions? Or Dan, you ready? Yeah. Yes, good. Did you hear that over there? He's saying that you see in this passage this idea that Jesus had this foreknowledge. He knew already that years down the road, Judas was going to betray me. Yes. What else? They followed and they didn't. So we're for the Calvinists and we're against the Calvinists. All right? What else? I know. Yeah. Yes. So Kimber's pointing out the beauty of this. When Jesus asks them, "Are you going to follow me too?" They're like, "I don't know what other options we have." This is like, "Hey, do you want to marry me?" I guess. I don't see anyone else. Like, that's their level of commitment here. And Jesus seems to be like, "All right, let's start a whole movement on these people." Right? Like, it's awesome. Yes. Yeah, eventually Judas, and probably even in this moment, Judas may not even know that that's coming. Yeah, good. Yes, yes. Not only is it a bizarre teaching to us, but it's a bizarre teaching to his first followers. They're hearing him say things like, "What are you talking about?" And there's a frustration sometimes that, like, just Jesus, plain, like, give it to us. And he's enigmatic. Yeah. 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 And if not intentional, there's at least a clear, Jesus won't give into the easy answers. And if you remember earlier in this passage, you need to hang on to this piece of information because we're going to come back to it later. Earlier in this passage, do you remember, I think it's verse 15, where they wanted to make him king, and that's where he kind of disappears, like, "Uh-oh, they're going to make me king. I better get out of here," which no one in history ever did, right? Like, that's just not the thing that people do, and yet Jesus keeps running away from those things, and so it's almost like he's trying to create some dissonance and disequilibrium. Isn't that such a sad question? Like, to me, okay, the question Jesus asks, that ache of all these people leaving. We see the human side of Jesus, that all these people have left, and he turns to the 12. And I guess you can read it different ways. I read it through my grid of a raging extrovert. If most of the people in the room this morning after church were like, "Yeah, we're done," there'd be this ache, and you'd turn to the people closest to you and say, "Are you going to go too? If you want to go with them, you can." Like, the sadness of that question to me, there's just ache there. Good. Yes. Did you catch that? He said what you said, but he'd asked Jesus to speak English, that he's trying to be confusing. Yes. So this passage is full of these rich phrases and ideas. Let's just work through them. On hearing it, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard teaching." Duh. Absolutely, it's a hard teaching. We want, kind of a product of our culture, we want everything easy, right? And this isn't condemnation. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Everybody pours macaroni out of a box once in a while. Or every day. But we want things simple. Like, you know, like there's mac and cheese that you can spend hours making real mac and cheese. Or you can dump it out of a box. We want things easy and simple. And that's so much of our culture. We're moving fast. We want things simple. I just want, give me the answers. Let me read an article and give me 6 tips. And if I just go to BuzzFeed, I'm going to answer all the big questions of my life. I can get a list of 10 things, and then it's all fixed. And one of the things Jesus seems to push against is that idea that things are easy or simple. And it's fine when it's our life. It's fine. You want your food fast, that's fine. All right, like, whatever you got to do. No judgment. But that idea has seeped into our spirituality, that we just want a fast answer, a quick thing. If I just go to church and get 4 things that rhyme with purple, then, I don't think there's anything that rhymes with purple, which is a genius point. Sorry. We want our church easy too, right? We want our spirituality simple. If you can just tell me the quick fix, if I can just do this thing, if I just pray this one prayer all the time, everything will be good. There is a prayer that if you pray it, God has to answer, right? Like there, we want things easy and simple. And the truth is that it's hard. Our lives are really complicated, and our histories are very complicated, and our relationships are complicated, and our existential doubts are complicated. And I think that we need to say that following Jesus, understanding God, understanding the universe and the arc of the universe and what God's doing and what God's calling me into, all of that is really hard. Can we just acknowledge that? Is that okay? I feel like there's this pressure sometimes, there's this pressure in church to make things easier. Like, you're talking over people's heads, like, make sure it's easy, that people can, you know, that there's five or an application, that they can get there real fast. And sometimes I just want to scream, like, this is hard. We're talking about our souls. It takes work. You're going to have everything we want in life takes work, right? If you want to be in great shape, it's going to require you to get up. Newsflash. If you want to be in great shape right now, it's going to require you to get up in the mornings. I ran the Rock Island Trail yesterday at 6:45, and I think it was already 80 plus degrees, and it was humid, and it was miserable. But you don't get in shape staying in bed and saying, it's hot outside. You get up and you run, and it hurts. I still hurt, right? But you do it, and it's hard. You want to get an advanced degree. You want to go somewhere in your job. You study. You work. I'm reading Amy Poehler's book, right? And so you see somebody that's wildly successful, and she looks like she's having fun. I think she is having fun. But if you listen to her story, she spent most of her 20s with no money and doing improv comedy and just working really hard at getting better at what she does. It just takes a lot of work. I was watching something this week about people that are successful and how much work they do. Everything that we want in life requires work. So why do we think the answers to our souls are going to be simple answers and real quick fixes? And if I just go to church and hear this one message, then everything will be fixed. Or if I just read this one book, everything will be done. And it doesn't work like that. If I want to move my soul into some space of shalom, that I'm a person that lives at some level of peace, there's no shortcut journey to that. It just takes a lot of quiet and focus and time and prayer and conversation, and it requires me to look into myself, and it requires me to face myself and say, oh, there's some really ugly parts of me, and I'm going to lean into those too. And there's going to be time where I just need to go back into my history and say, these are the things in my past that have shaped me, and that's painful, but I need to talk about that pain. And anybody that's done that work, you know that it's hard work. I read this book this week. Somebody recommended it to me, and it's so good for so many reasons. It's called Necessary Endings by a guy named Henry Cloud. And the idea is that life is like everything in life comes to an end at some point, right? Like no matter what it is, even you will come to an end, if I can put it so delicately, right? Like everything comes to an end. So how do we know when a relationship, a job, a thing, a project, when it's actually over? And then how do we make it over? And he says part of maturity is getting to the place where we can let go of one wish in order to have another. The immature mind wants it all, but the truth is that the most valuable things come with a cost. To win, we have to give up some things for others. Everything in your life comes at a cost. If you want to go on a spiritual journey, it comes at a cost. It's going to take you time. It's going to take you energy. It's going to require levels of honesty. It's a hard teaching. Isn't that fun? Welcome to church this morning. And then out of that, verse 66. From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. That's just the reality. If you've been around for any period of time, you see people that start a journey, whatever it is, and when it gets hard, they quit. Actually, it's all of our journeys, right? How many of us have started a project, a weight loss plan, a self-improvement plan of some sort, and we've quit because it got hard, right? I'm looking for who doesn't raise their hand. You get to come up and give the sermon after this because we've all done it, right? Monday, I went out on a run, and it was, and I chose to go at 3:30 in the afternoon, which wasn't the smartest thing, right? And so I took one of my boys with me to schlep water, because that's what I do when it's a really hot run. I take my boys, and that's why we had kids. And so I put Jackson on, he had a backpack in his bike, and he was carrying water. And so then when I need water, I tell him to go up ahead, and he gets the water out and holds it for me, and I run by and drink it. And so it's awesome. If you don't have kids, you should get one for this. So I went up the trail, and we were about 2.5 miles out of Alta, because we had parked at Alta on the Rock Island Trail. We're about 2.5 miles out, and he handed me a water bottle, and I took it, and I poured a little on my head, and then I poured a little on his head, and then I handed the bottle back to him, and he wasn't ready, and it fell on the ground, and all of our water just spilled on the ground. So then we were stuck, and we still had to go like out 3.5 before we started coming back. And so we did that, and then we turned around, we came back, and reality is, I had to walk. There's points in my run, because I was doing this run where I ran 5 miles and then I had to sprint a bunch at the end, like interval sprints and all that stuff. And I got to the point where I just couldn't keep going. Like I could feel my heart rate going up and things getting dizzy and started getting the spins, you know, like that. That's kind of dangerous at that point. You should stop. Chubby guy took off his shirt. It was so bad, right? Like it was bad. And there comes points where we've all been in those spaces where we've turned back. And that's part of the reality too, is that as we walk with people in the spiritual journey, that's part of the reality, is sometimes it just gets too hard. And sometimes people turn away and turn back. And that's, I think we need to brace ourselves for that sometimes, because sometimes we want so much for somebody else and we can't do the hard work for them and it gets really hard and they turn back. Here's the deal. If Jesus' followers turn back, the people that were like with him, these are his disciples, these are the people that followed him around that were closest to him, if they turned back, we should recognize that people around us are going to turn back too. And the saddest part of this whole thing in 66 is that they no longer followed him. John is writing this book decades afterwards, and he says not only did these folks turn back, but they didn't ever return. They just decided at this point, this is just too hard. And then Jesus says, you do not want me to leave you too. Jesus asks the 12, and Simon Peter answers, to whom shall we go? I love this statement. If Peter was a seminary student and asked about what do you believe about Jesus, he doesn't graduate seminary on this, right? Basically, he says some version of, I don't know where else we go, and it seems like you're from God. That's the extent of his answer. And what I love most about this passage is that Jesus seems really, really okay with that. And that's who he builds his church on. This is Peter, remember, and we did a whole series on Peter. This is Peter. Jesus builds his church on Peter and his statement and all that stuff. But it's very, he just doesn't have it nailed down. If you ask Peter, what are the, you know, make sure you have your core doctrinal beliefs. Peter doesn't have core doctrinal beliefs. He has all things being equal, I guess I'll follow you because I don't know what else to do. And then the beauty of this passage to me then is this contrast then between Peter and Judas. It's a strange place to insert Judas into the story, and I think one of the reasons John might be doing it is because he wants to juxtapose these two people. Now let's say some things about Judas for just a minute. Tell me everything we know about Judas. Treasurer. He kept the money for the disciples. Good. Greed, maybe. I don't think he was motivated by greed, actually. I'll tell you about what I think his motivation was in just a minute. He was a thief. What else? How'd he die? He betrayed Jesus. Good. Yeah. He either fell into a field and his bowels spilled out, or he hung himself, or some combination thereof. He was Jesus' friend. I think we miss sometimes that idea that this is Judas who followed Jesus for 3 years. He left everything behind and followed Jesus for 3 years. It'd be fun someday to get the whole story, right? Like, what causes this person who gives his life to following after Jesus for 3 years to get to a place where he says, I'm going to betray him? Yeah. I think there's some of that too. He set a chain of events in motion that really went way beyond what he thought was going to happen, and the remorse that we see from Judas is that. this week I was doing some reading about Judas, and his name gives us just a little bit. There's his name, he's known as Judas as Iscariot. Iscariot can mean one of two things. Some people think it means a man of Kirioth. Kirioth, there was a region, they're not exactly sure where it was, but it could be just a regional name. Other people believe that actually this is a reference to Sicarii. Does anybody know this word? The Greek word is daggermen. So in the days of in these days when you have all these revolutions and you have people gathering and all this stuff, what the daggermen would do is daggermen would go into big crowds and they would wear very small daggers that wouldn't be noticed. And then when there was an uprising, they would just get close to the person that they wanted to kill and then they'd stab them and then put it back away and disappear into the crowd. If this is true, if Judas is a Sicarii, then that would put him in the political party of the Zealots. The Zealots, we see other disciples of Jesus that are Zealots. It would put Judas in that camp. The Zealots believed that the only way forward for Israel was a violent uprising against the Romans. And they realized they weren't dumb. They knew they were small and the Romans were big. But they thought that if they would just have the faith to rise up against the Romans, God, the one who like came to Gideon's aid and the one who helped the people drive out all the Philistines, that God would show up in the way that he did way back then. And that God would help them, though they were small, to drive out the Romans. They just had to have the faith to put the dagger in somebody to start. Does that make sense? That's the zealot party. And if you're a zealot party member and Jesus is offered a kingship and he turns it down, you have a deep, deep level of disappointment. And so it got me wondering about maybe Judas's motivations. Maybe Judas was super, super devout. Maybe he really, really believed in Jesus, but at some point along the way, Jesus deeply disappointed Judas. That what Judas wanted out of Jesus wasn't what Jesus actually was, and he couldn't ever get past the disappointment of that. And maybe that's what drives him. We don't know exactly, but maybe that's the thing. And so we have two people here, two followers of Jesus, two people who followed him around for 3 years. One says, I guess I'll follow after you, and one who says, I can't. And it feels like they're separated by about this much, aren't they? I've said before, like if you watch cop shows or read books and stuff, sometimes the line between the police and the criminals is a very thin one, right? And the line between Judas and Peter, I think, is a really thin one. I was thinking about this week. So let me diagram this because I like to diagram. Let's pretend there's a continuum. And on one side over here, this is the convinced. This is the most convinced person you know. They have no doubts about their faith. I think it's a smoke screen. But let's just say this is the person that is most confident that this is what I believe, and I believe all of it, and I have no questions about anything I believe, right? So a little bit of a caricature over here, because I don't think anybody's that sure. And then way over here is the person that's like, I am 100% utterly convinced there is no possible chance that there could be anything related to or kind of like a God in the universe, all right? So both of them caricatures way out there. I think that between those two, you have all of the rest of us, right? Does that make sense? All of us live somewhere between those two spaces. And I think when we start thinking about Judas and Peter, maybe they both live in this middle space, and maybe they both lean a different way. That maybe both of them had this experience of Jesus. They followed him around for 3 years. They knew him better than anyone else. And yet when it gets to that moment, is it this or this? Is it this way or this way? Which one are you going to choose? How are you going to do this when they get to that moment? This is hard. Do we stick it out even though it's hard? Do I keep running? Or do I start walking? Do I quit? Right at that point, they both choose a different path. The truth is that we look at that and we can start probably thinking about people in our lives, that there's people we know that are Peters. I think this church, by the way, is filled with Peters. I think this church in particular is full of a lot. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of you that are like, I don't know what I believe about anything, but Jesus seems to be of God, so I'll keep following that way. And I think it's enough. I think that's all it takes is just that much faith. That I don't have any good answers, and I don't know how to do any of this, but it's enough to know just that little bit. I can follow that. And I think we all know Judas's too, right? People that seem so deeply spiritual and thoughtful, and they seem so close, and yet when it gets down to that moment, they just can't get all the way there. But I think the bigger truth is that I play both of those roles all the time in me. That inside of me, about all kinds of things, there's moments where I'm Peter, like I don't know where else I'd go. I'm only trained to preach I have a Bible major, for goodness sakes. Where else do I go, right? And then there's the parts of me sometimes are like, I can't do this. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not sure about this thing. And we fight this battle just even inside of ourselves. Love this. Sometimes a commentary actually has a really great quotation. Dale Bruner says, the world itself is filled with half unbelieving believers and with half believing unbelievers. Isn't that the truth? Do I need to read again? Go through it slow. The world is filled with half unbelieving believers and with half believing unbelievers. That's the situation. Is that all of us have this and we're full of conversations. We're surrounded by people who are in that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so that's beautiful. So then Peter eventually moves into the Judas role. Like, that's beautiful. So think about this, right? She just said Peter eventually denies Jesus. So Peter goes from, I don't know what else to do. And then on the night of Jesus' thing, he's like, I don't know the guy at all. And then the next couple days later, he's back to, but where, Jesus, I'll follow you wherever. Just tell me what to do. And Jesus says, feed my sheep, that whole thing, right? Peter in himself, we see that back and forth, the tension in all of that. So here's the thing. Oh my. Yeah. Two more. With Judas too. The regret. Yeah. So maybe Judas in the regret, we see the turning back into Peter. Oh, that's beautiful. I wish I'd have thought of that to preach that. Yeah, he goes back to the temple to get back the money. He flips roles too. Man, y'all are smarter than me. We've known this. And then it just comes up. Isn't that just beautiful though, how that happens? And I think sometimes that for many of us, we grow up in traditions or we put pressure on ourselves that we have to have it all figured out. We have to know all the answers. And some of us, even here, what holds us back to really chasing after Jesus is this idea that I don't have it figured out. I'm not the convinced. I'm not that person. I'm more like Peter. Or I even maybe feel a little bit like Judas. And yet I think what just grips me in this passage is that we're being invited in anyway. That Jesus is calling us inward despite wherever we may be on a continuum, but it just keeps, Jesus knows that it's Judas and keeps calling Judas into relationship with him. Yep, Judas is going to be the one. He's going to betray me, and we're going to have dinner together, and we're going to travel together, and we're going to be with each other, and I'm going to invest 3 years in my life into this person who's leaning the other way, because maybe later on he's going to have this moment where he turns. And so this morning, I think as we kind of put John to rest for a little while, the question is this that moment for you? Is God doing something, or the universe, whatever you need to say, but is something happening in you where there's this big invitation to take steps forward, to start giving yourself to some kind of a spiritual discipline, to silence or solitude or reading or joining, taking a step towards other people that believe, and maybe whatever God is calling you forward into, and yet maybe you sit back on your heels, or maybe I sit back on my heels because I just don't know enough and I'm not sure, and yet I think the invitation is always still there to keep moving inward. To keep moving in. And it's hard. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to face your demons, and you're going to have to face hard relationships, and you're going to have to do relational work, and you're going to have to do things that you're not comfortable with, and Jesus is going to call us to love enemies, and he's going to ask us to give away our wealth, and he's going to call us to do all kinds of things that are really, really hard. And we're not even sure we believe all those things exactly. We're not sure what we believe about it. But the invitation right at the moment is, will you continue to follow? And so we take a step, just one. And we just take another step. And we take another step. Let's pray. God, all of us in this room come from a whole lot of different stuff this week. We have stuff that's churning in us. We have hurts and we have pains and we have relational chaos and we have some of us, our own past that we just kind of keep back there, and we don't even want to look at it. And some of us, it's the week forward that we're so afraid to even think about that. And there's so much turmoil in many of us as we sit here this morning, and we don't even have the answers. We don't know what we believe about a whole bunch of doctrinal things that people tell us we ought to have all figured out. And thank you, Jesus, that you love Peter's and Judas's, that you love us. And you keep calling us to keep following after you, despite what we believe or don't believe or know or don't know, that you just keep inviting us. So God, I pray that in this community, you help us to be a place that supports Peter's and Judas's, that we see each other for the contradictions that we are, and we see ourselves for the contradictions that we are, and then we love ourselves and love each other like you love us, even despite all of it. So help us to be that kind of place for ourselves, for our spouses, for our friends, for others in this church. In your name I pray. Amen.